Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'll be reading to you today from Homer's Iliad. This is the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Iliad, and we are reading from Book 21. When we left off in Book 20, Achilles, the Greek, was winning great glory for himself. His horses had bolted, and he was crazily killing everyone in sight. Here in Book 21, we have the Theomachia. We call it the Theomachia because it is the battle of the gods. The gods have paired off against one another. They did that in Book 20, remember? Book 21. But when they came to the crossing place of the fair running river of whirling Xanthus, a stream whose father was Zeus the immortal, there Achilles split them and chased some back over the flat land toward the city where the Achaeans themselves had stampeded in terror on the day before, when glorious Hector was still in his fury. Along this ground they were streaming in flight, but Hera let fall a deep mist before them to stay them. Meanwhile, the other half were crowded into the silvery whirls of the deep-running river and tumbled into it in huge clamor, and the steep-running water sounded, line 10, and the banks echoed hugely about them as they, outcrying, tried to swim this way and that, spun about in the eddies. So Achilles has driven many of the Trojans right into the river. As before the blast of a fire, the locusts escaping into a river swarm in air, and the fire unwearied blazes from a sudden start, and the locusts huddle in water, so before Achilles, the murmuring waters of Xanthus, the deep whirling, were filled with confusion of men and of horses. But heaven-descended Achilles left his spear there on the bank, leaning against the tamarisks, and leapt in like some immortal, with only his sword, but his heart was bent upon evil actions. Line 20, and he struck in a circle around him. The shameful sound of their groaning rose as they were struck with the sword, and the water was reddened with blood. As before a huge gaping dolphin, the other fishes escaping, cram the corners of a deep water harbor in fear, for he avidly eats up any he can catch, so the Trojans along the course of the terrible river shrank under the bluffs. He, when his hands grew weary with killing, chose out and took 12 young men alive from the river to be vengeance for the death of Patroclus, the son of Menoetius. Do you remember back in Book 18, line 336, Achilles had vowed to get 12 men for the funeral pyre to sacrifice for Patroclus, and here he's grabbing the 12 men. We'll see in Book 23, line 175, he will actually offer them on the funeral pyre. These, bewildered with fear like fawns, he led out of the water, and he took young men. He led out of the water and bound their hands behind them with thongs, well cut of leather. Line 30. With the very belts they themselves wore on their ungirt tunics, and gave them to his companions to lead away to the hollow ships. Then himself whirled back, still in a fury to kill men. So he stops killing only long enough to collect 12 very young men, tie them up with their own belts, send them back with his companions to the ships for later, and then he begins his killing again. Line 34. And there he came upon a son of Dardanian Priam as he escaped from the river, a Lycaon, one whom he himself had taken before, and led him unwilling from his father's gardens on a night foray. He, with the sharp bronze, was cutting young branches from a fig tree so that they could make him rails for a chariot, when an unlooked-for evil thing came upon him, the brilliant Achilles, who that time sold him as slave in strong-founded Lemnos, carrying him there by ship, and the son of Jason paid for him. From there a guest and friend, who paid a great price, redeemed him, Eretian of Imbrus, and sent him to shining Arisbe, and from there he fled away and came to the house of his father. So here's a young man, a son of Priam, who Achilles once before came on as he was working at home, kidnapped him, and he sold from place to place, and finally he was able to run away and return to his father. Line 45. For 11 days he pleasured his heart with friends and family after he got back from Lemnos, but on the 12th day, once again, the god cast him into the hands of Achilles, who this time was to send him down unwilling on his way to the death god. And now his brilliant, swift-footed Achilles saw him and knew him, naked and without helm or shield, and he had no spear left, line 50, but had thrown all these things on the ground, being weary and sweating, With the escape from the river and his knees were beaten with weariness, disturbed, Achilles spoke to his own great-hearted spirit. "Can this be? Here is a strange thing that my eyes look on. Now the great-hearted Trojans, even those I've killed already, will stand and rise again out of the gloom and the darkness, as this man has come back and escaped the day without pity, though he was sold into sacred Lemnos. But the mane of the grain sea could not hold him, though it holds back many who are unwilling." So Achilles sees him and thinks, "Oh my goodness, I sold him into slavery. I thought he'd be dead by now. Look, here he is back again." Line 60. "But come now, he must be given a taste of our spearhead, so that I may know inside my heart and make certain whether he will come back even from there, or the prospering earth will hold him, she who holds back even the strong man." So he pondered, waiting, and the other in terror came near him, in an agony to catch at his knees. So this man is exhausted, almost drowned, got out of the river, threw his armor down, and he's thinking, "Achilles, I supplicated once before, he sold me into slavery, and I'm going to beg him again." Line 65. In an agony to catch at his knees, and the wish in his heart was to get away from the evil death and the dark fate. By this brilliant Achilles held the long spear uplifted above him, straining to stab, but he underran the stroke and caught him by the knees, bending, and the spear went over his back and stood fast in the ground, for all its desire to tear a man's flesh. A Lycaon with one hand had taken him by the knees in supplication, and with the other held and would not let go of the edged spear, and spoke aloud to him, and addressed him in winged words, "Achilles, I am at your knees. Respect my position. Have mercy on me. I am in the place, illustrious, of a supplement who must be honored, for you were the first beside whom I tasted the yield of Demeter. On that day you captured me in the strong-laid garden and took me away from my father and those near me and sold me away into sacred Lemnos, and 100 oxen I fetched you." Line 80. "My release was ransomed 3 times as great, and this is the 12th dawn since I came back to Ilion. I've only been home 12 days. After much suffering, now again cursed destiny has put me in your hands, and I think I must be hated by Zeus the father who has given me once more to you, and my mother bore me to a short life, Laothoo, daughter of aged Altes, Altes, lord of the Lydiges, whose delight is in battle, and holds headlong Pedasus on the river Santinius. His daughter was given to Priam, who had many wives beside her. We are 2 who were born to her. You will have cut the throats of both, since once you beat down in the forefront of the foot fighters Polydorus the godlike with a cast of the sharp spear." So this young man says, "There are only 2 of us that Priam had by my mother. You've already killed one. This time the evil shall be mine in this place, since I do not think I shall escape your hands, since divinity drove me against them. Still, put away in your heart this other thing I say to you." Line 95. "Do not kill me. I'm not from the same womb as Hector, he who killed your powerful and kindly companion." So the glorious son of Priam addressed him, speaking in supplication, but heard in turn the voice without pity. "Poor fool, no longer speak to me of ransom, nor argue it. In the time before Patroclus came to the day of his destiny, then it was the way of my heart's choice to be sparing of the Trojans, and many I took alive and disposed of them. Now there is not one who can escape death. If the gods send him against my hands in front of Ilion, not one of all the Trojans and beyond others, the children of Priam." Line 105. "So, friend, you die also. Why all this clamor about it? Patroclus also is dead, who is better by far than you are. Do you not see what a man I am, how huge, how splendid, and born of a great father, and the mother who bore me immortal? Yet even I have also my death and my strong destiny." Line 110. "And there shall be a dawn, or an afternoon, or a noontime, when some man in the fighting will take the life from me also, either with a spear cast or an arrow flown from the bowstring." So he spoke, and in the other the knees and the inward heart went slack. He let go of the spear and sat back, spreading wide both hands. But Achilles, drawing his sharp sword, struck him beside the neck at the collarbone, and the double-edged sword plunged full length inside. He dropped to the ground, face downward, and lay at length, and the black blood flowed, and the ground was soaked with it. Line 120. Achilles caught him by the foot and slung him into the river to drift, and spoke winged words of vaunting derision over him. "Lie there now among the fish who will lick the blood away from your wound, and care nothing for you, nor will your mother lay you on the deathbed and mourn over you, but Scamandrus will carry you spinning down to the wide bend of the salt water." Line 125. And so, of course, this last act of cruelty was for Achilles to throw the body into the water where it cannot be found. and a fish will break a ripple shuddering dark on the water as he rises to feed upon the shining fat of Lycaon. Die on, all, till we come to the city of sacred Ilion, Troy, you in flight and I killing you from behind, and there will not be any rescue for you from your silvery world strong-running river, for all the numbers of bulls you dedicate to it and drown single-foot horses alive in its eddies. And yet even so, die all an evil death, till all of you pay for the death of Patroclus and the slaughter of the Achaeans, whom you killed beside the running ships when I was not with them. Line 135. He spoke, but the anger was rising now in the heart of the river, and he pondered in his heart as to how he could stop the labor of brilliant Achilles and fend destructions away from the Trojans. So now the river is getting angry at Achilles and trying to think of how he could make him stop bringing destruction to the Trojans. Line 139. And now with the spear far shadowing in his hands, Peleus' son, Achilles, was springing, furious to kill him, on Asterpaeus, the son of Pelegon, who in turn was born of the wide-running river Axius and of Periboa, eldest of the daughters of Scemnius, for she lay in love with the deep, whirling river. Against this man Achilles rose up, and he came out to face him from the river, holding two spears, for that Xanthus had inspired valor into his heart. And you realize it's called Xanthus by men and Scamandrus by gods. And what did Achilles call this river? Scamandrus. For Xanthus had inspired valor into his heart in anger for the slaughter of the young men whom Achilles had slain beside his waters and taken no pity. Now, as these two in their advance encounter together, first of the two to speak was swift-footed, brilliant Achilles. Line 150. What man are you, and whence, who dare stand up to my onset? Still unhappy are those whose sons match warcraft against me. Then in turn the glorious son of Pelegon answered him, High-hearted son of Peleus, why ask of my generation? I'm from Paeonia far away, where the soil is generous, and lead the men of Paeonia with long spears, and this for me is the 11th day since I arrived in Ilion. For my generation, it is from the broad waters of Axius, Axius who floods the land with the loveliest waters. His son was Pelegon the spear-famed, but men say I am Pelegon's son. Now, glorious Achilles, we shall fight together. So he spoke, challenging, and brilliant Achilles uplifted the Pelian ash spear, but the warrior Asteropaeus threw with both spears at the same time, being ambidextrous. With one spear he hit the shield, but could not altogether break through the shield, line 165, since the gold stayed it that the god had given. With the other spear he struck Achilles on the right forearm, and grazed it so that the blood gushed out in a dark cloud, and the spear overpassed him and fixed in the ground, straining to reach his body. Throwing second, Achilles let fly at Asterpaeus with the straight-flying ash spear in a fury to kill him, but missed his man and hit the high bank, so that the ash spear was driven half its length and stuck in the bank of the river. But the son of Peleus, Achilles, drawing from beside his thigh the sharp sword, sprang upon him in fury, and Asterpaeus could not with his heavy hand wrench Achilles' ash spear free of the river bank. Line 175. Three times he struggled, straining to wrench it clear, and three times gave over the effort, and now for the fourth time he was bending over the ash spear of Achilles, trying to break it. But before this, Achilles took his life with the sword from close up, for he struck him in the belly next to the navel, and all his guts poured out on the ground, and a mist of darkness closed over both eyes, as he gasped life out, and springing upon his chest, Achilles stripped his armor away and spoke in triumph above him. Lie so! It is hard even for those sprung of a river to fight against the children of Cronos, whose strength is almighty. Line 185. You said you were of the generation of the wide-running river, but I claim I'm the generation of great Zeus. The man is my father who is lord over many Myrmidons, Peleus, Aeacus's son. But Zeus was the father of Iacus, and as Zeus is stronger than the rivers that run to the sea, so the generation of Zeus is made stronger than that of a river. In other words, my father's better or bigger or stronger than your father. And so the family tree goes for Achilles from Zeus to Iacus to Peleus to Achilles. Line 192. For here is a great river beside you, if he were able to help, but it is not possible to fight Zeus, son of Cronos. Not powerful Achilles matches his strength against Zeus, nor the enormous strength of ocean with his deep running waters, ocean from whom all rivers are in the entire sea, and all springs and all deep wells have their waters of him, Yet even Ocean is afraid of the lightning of great Zeus, and the dangerous thunderbolt when it breaks from the sky, crashing. Line 200. So he spoke, and pulled the bronze spear free of the river bluff, and left him there, when he had torn the heart of life from him, sprawled in the sands and drenched in the dark water. And about Asteropaeus, the eels and the other fish were busy tearing him and nibbling the fat that lay by his kidneys. But Achilles went on after the Paeonians, crested with horsehair, who had scattered in fear along the banks of the eddying river when they had seen their greatest man, in the strong encounter, gone down by force under the sword in the hands of Peleides, Achilles. There he killed Thersilochus and Astrypilus and Medon, Mnesus and Thrasius and Ionius, and of Elephestes, line 210. Now swift Achilles would have killed even more Paeonians, except that the deep whirling river spoke to him in anger and immortal likeness, and the voice rose from the depth of the eddies. So the river itself takes on a mortal likeness and speaks to Achilles. Line 214. O Achilles, your strength is greater, your axe more violent than all men's, since always the very gods are guarding you. If the son of Cronos has given all Trojans to your destruction, drive them at least out of me to the plain, and there work your havoc. For the loveliness of my waters is crammed with corpses. I cannot find a channel to cast my waters into the bright sea, since I'm congested with the dead men you kill so brutally. Let me alone, then, lure the people. I'm confounded. Then in answer to him spoke Achilles of the swift feet. This is Achilles speaking to the river. All this, illustrious Scamandrus, shall be as you order, but I will not leave off my killing of the proud Trojans until I've pinned them inside their city and attempted Hector strength against strength, until he has killed me or I have killed him. He spoke, and like something more than mortal, swept down on the Trojans, and now the deep whirling river called aloud to Apollo. Shame, lord of the silver bow, Zeus's son. You have not kept the counsels of Cronion, who very strongly ordered you to stand by the Trojans and defend them, until the sun setting at last goes down in darkness all the generous darkens all the generous ploughland. He spoke, and spear-famed Achilles leaped into the middle water with a spring from the bluff, but the river in a boiling surge was upon him, and rose making turbulent all his waters, and pushed off the many dead men whom Achilles had killed, piled in abundance in the stream. These, bellowing like a bull, he shoved out on the dry land, but saved the living in the sweet waters, hiding them under the huge depths of the whirling current. And about Achilles, in his confusion, a dangerous wave rose up, and beat against his shield and pushed it. He could not brace himself with his feet, but caught with his hands at an elm tree, tall and strong grown. But this, uptorn by the roots and tumbling, ripped away the whole cliff, and with its dense tangle of roots, stopped the run of the lovely current, and fallen full length in the water, dammed the very stream. Achilles, uprising out of the whirlpool, made a dash to get to the plain in the speed of his quick feet in fear, but the great god, the river god, would not let him be, but rose on him in a darkening edge of water, minded to stop the labor of brilliant Achilles and fend destruction away from the Trojans. Line 250. The son of Peleus sprang away the length of a spear cast, running with the speed of the black eagle, the marauder who is at once the strongest of flying things and the swiftest. In the likeness of this he sped away. On his chest the bronze armor clashed terribly, and bending away to escape from the river he fled, but the river came streaming after him in huge noise. And, what was it like? As a man running a channel from a spring of dark water guides the run of the water among his plants and his gardens with a mattock in his hand and knocks down the blocks in the channel, in the rush of the water all the pebbles beneath are torn loose from place, and the water that has been dripping suddenly jets on in a steep place and goes too fast even for the man who guides it. So always the crest of the river was overtaking Achilles for all his speed of foot, since gods are stronger than mortals. Line 265. And every time swift-footed, brilliant Achilles would begin to turn and stand and fight the river, and try to discover if all the gods who hold the wide heaven were after him, every time again the enormous wave of the sky-fed river would strike his shoulders from above. He tried in his desperation to keep a high spring with his feet, but the river was wearing his knees out as it ran fiercely beneath him, and cut the ground from under his feet. Peleides, Achilles, groaned aloud, gazing into the wide sky. Father Zeus! No god could endure to save me from the river, who am so pitiful. And what then shall become of me? Is it not so much any other Uranian god who has done this? Line 275. It is not so much any other Uranian god who has done this, but my own mother who beguiled me with falsehoods, who told me that underneath the battlements of the armored Trojans I should be destroyed by the flying shafts of Apollo. I wish now Hector had killed me, the greatest man grown in this place. A brave man would have been the slayer, and as the slain was a brave man, line 280. But now this is a dismal death I'm doomed to be caught in, trapped in a big river as if I were a boy in a swineherd, swept away by a torrent when he tries to cross in a rainstorm. So Achilles is whining to Zeus that he does not want to die like this. His mother must have lied to him. He doesn't look brave, he won't be brave, and of course the body could be lost forever. So he spoke, and Poseidon and Athena swiftly came near him and stood beside him with their shapes in the likeness of mortals, and caught him hand by hand and spoke to him in assurance. The first of them to speak was the shaker of the earth, Poseidon. Do not be afraid, son of Peleus, nor be so anxious. Such as we, two of the gods who stand beside you to help you, by the consent of Zeus, myself and Pallas Athena, thereby it is not your destiny to be killed by the river. But he shall be presently stopped, and you yourself shall behold it. Okay, they're going to stop the river, and he gets to watch. But we also have close counsel to give you, if you will believe us. Do not let stay your hands from the collision of battle until you have pinned the people of Troy, those who escape you, inside the famed wall of Ilion. Then, when you have taken Hector's life, go back again to the ships. We grant you the winning of glory. So speaking, the two went back again among the immortals. But Achilles went on, and the urgency of the gods strongly stirred him into the plain, line 300. But the river filled with an outrush of water, and masses of splendid armor from the young men who had perished floated there, and their bodies. But against the hard drive of the river, straight on he kept a high spring with his feet, and the river-wide running could not stop him now, since he was given great strength by Athena. Line 305. But Scamandrus did not either abate his fury, but all the more raged at Pelion, Achilles, and high uplifting the wave of his waters, gathered it to a crest and called aloud upon Simoeus, "Beloved brother," to the other river, "let even the two of us join to hold back the strength of a man, since presently he will storm the great city of Lord Priam. The Trojans cannot stand up to him in battle, but help me beat him off with all speed, and make full your currents with water from your springs, and rouse up all of your torrents, and make a big wave rear up, and wake the heavy confusion and sound of timbers and stones, so we can stop this savage man who is now in his strength, and rages in fury like the immortals." Rages in fury like the immortals. This is how our story began. This is line 315, book 21. This is how our story began. The problem of Achilles' anger. He is angry more than a mortal, like an immortal. Line 316. For I say that his strength will not be enough for him, nor his beauty, nor his arms in their splendor, which somewhere deep down under the waters shall lie folded under the mud, and I will whelm his own body deep, and pile it over with abundance of sands and rubble numberless, nor shall the Achaeans know where to look for his bones to gather them. Such ruin will I pile over him, and there shall his monument be made, and he will have no need of any funeral mound to be buried in by the Achaeans. He spoke, and rose against Achilles, so the river plans to bury him. He spoke, and rose against Achilles, turbulent, boiling to a crest, muttering in foam and blood and dead bodies, line 325, until the purple wave of the river fed from the bright sky, lifted high and caught in its waters the son of Peleus. But Hera, greatly fearing for Achilles, cried in a loud voice, lest he be swept away in the huge, deep, eddying river, and at once thereafter appealed to her own dear son, Hephaestus, 330. Arise up, god of the dragging feet, my child, for we believe that whirling Xanthus would be fit antagonist for you in battle. Go now quickly to the help of Achilles. Make shine a great flame while I rise up, and bring in out of the sea a troublesome storm of the west wind and the whitening south wind, a storm that will burn the heads of the Trojans and burn their armor carrying the evil flame, while you, by the banks of Xanthus, set fire to the trees and throw fire on the river himself. And do not by any means let him turn you with winning words or revilements. Do not let your fury be stopped until such time as I lift my voice and cry to you. Then stay your weariless burning. Line 341. So Hera tells Hephaestus, you're the match to go battle this river. Hera spoke, and Hephaestus set on them an inhuman fire. First, he kindled a fire in the plain and burned the numerous corpses that lay there in abundance, slain by Achilles, and all the plain was parched and the shining water was straightened. As when the north wind of autumn suddenly makes dry a garden freshly watered and makes glad the man who is tending it, so the entire flat land was dried up with Hephaestus's burning the dead bodies. Then he turned his flame in its shining into the river. The elms burned, the willows and the tamarisks, line 350. The clover burned, and the rushes, and the galingale, all those plants that grew in abundance by the lovely stream of the river. The eels were suffering, and the fish in the whirl of the water, who leaped out along the lovely river's waters, in every direction in affliction under the hot blast of resourceful Hephaestus. Line 355. The strength of the river was burning away. He gave voice and called out by name, Hephaestus, not one of the gods could stand up against you. This is the river begging Hephaestus. I, for one, could not fight the flame of a fire like this one. Leave your attack. Brilliant Achilles can capture the city of the Trojans now for me. What have I to do with this quarrel? Line 360. So the river is saying, I give in. Go ahead. Take Troy. I could care less. He spoke, blazing with fire, and his lovely waters were seething. And, what was it like? As a cauldron that is propped over a great fire boils up, dancing on its whole circle with dry sticks burning beneath it as it melts down the fat of swine made tender, so Xanthus's lovely streams were burned with the fire, and the water was boiling and would not flow along, but was stopped under stress of the hot blast, strongly blown by resourceful Hephaestus. And now the river cried out to Hera in the winged words of strong supplication, Hera, why did your son assault me to trouble my waters beyond others? Line 370. It is not so much I who have done anything against you as all the rest of the gods who stand by to help the Trojans. And now indeed I will leave off, if such is your order, but let him leave off too. I will swear you a promise not ever to drive the day of evil away from the Trojans, and not even when all the city of Troy is burned in the ravening fire on that day when the warlike sons of the Achaeans burn it. Here we find out the river's begging Hera to call off Hephaestus and his fire. Leave me alone. And the river says, in return, I promise I will not drive away the day of evil from the Trojans, not even when Troy is burning, when the sons of the Achaeans are burning it up. Line 377. Now when the goddess of the white arms, Hera, had heard this, immediately she spoke to her own dear son, Hephaestus. Hephaestus, hold, my glorious child, since it is not fitting to batter thus an immortal god for the sake of the mortals. You really shouldn't do that, honey. Line 381. So she spoke, and Hephaestus quenched his inhuman fire. Now the lovely waters ran their ripples back in the channel. But when the strength of Xanthus had been beaten, these two gods rested, since Hera, for all she was still angry, restrained them. But upon the other gods descended the wearisome burden of hatred, and the wind of their fury blew from division, and they collided with a grand crash, the broad earth echoing, and the huge sky sounded as with trumpets. Zeus heard it from where he sat on Olympus, and was amused in his deep heart for pleasure as he watched the gods' collision in conflict. Line 390. And so Zeus is amused at this collision of all the gods. Thereafter they stood not long apart from each other. All right, who's fighting the gods? For Ares began it, the shield stabber, and rose up against Athena with the bronze spear in his hand and spoke a word of revilement. Why, once more, you dog-fly, have you stirred up trouble among the gods with the blast of your blown fury and the pride of your heart driving you? Do you not remember how you set on Diomedes, Tydeus's son, to spear me? And you yourself, laying hold of the far-seeing pike, pushed it straight into me and tore my skin in its beauty. So now I'm minded to pay you back for all you've done to me. He spoke and stabbed against the ghastly Aegis with fluttering straps, line 400, which gives way not even before the bolt of Zeus's lightning. All right, Ares shouldn't have even tried to hit the Aegis, because even Zeus's lightning cannot harm it. There, blood-dripping Ares made his stab with the long spear, but Athena, giving back, caught up in her heavy hand a stone that lay in the plain, black and rugged and huge, one which men of a former time had set there as a boundary mark of the cornfield. Line 405. With this, she hit furious Ares in the neck, and unstrung him. He spread over 7 acres in his fall, and his hair dragged in the dust, and his armor clashed. but Pallas Athena, laughing, stood above him and spoke to him in the winged words of triumph. So line 410, Athena now is vaunting over Ares. "You child, did you not think even this time how much stronger I can claim I am than you when you match your fury against me? Therefore you are paying atonement to your mother's furies, since she is angry and wishes you ill because you abandoned the Achaeans and have given your aid to the insolent Trojans." She spoke, and turned the shining of her eyes away, but taking Ares by the hand, the daughter of Zeus, Aphrodite, led him away, groaning always, his strength scarce gathered back into him. But now, as the goddess of the white arms, Hera, noticed her, immediately she spoke to Pallas Athena her winged words. Line 420. "For shame now, Atriton! This is Athena, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis. Here again is this dog-fly leading murderous Ares out of the fighting and through the confusion. Quick, go after her!" Who's leading Ares out? Aphrodite. She spoke, and Athena swept in pursuit, heart full of gladness, and caught up with her and drove a blow at her breast with her ponderous hands, so that her knees went slack and the heart inside her. Line 425. So Athena apparently has hit Aphrodite where it hurts. Those two both lay sprawled on the generous earth, but Athena stood above them and spoke to them in winged words of triumph. So she's vaunting again. "Now may all who bring their aid to the Trojans be in such case as these, when they do battle with the armored Argives, as daring and as unfortunate, as now Aphrodite came companion in arms to Ares and faced my fury. So we should long ago have rested after our fighting, once having utterly stormed the strong-founded city of Ilion." She spoke, and the goddess of the white arms, Hera, smiled on her. But now the powerful shaker of the earth, this is Poseidon, line 435, spoke to Apollo, "Phoebus, why do you and I yet stand yet apart? It does not suit when the others have began, and it were too shameful if without fighting we go back to the brazen house of Zeus on Olympus. Begin you, are younger born than I. It is not well for me to begin, since I am elder born than you and no more." Line 440. And of course, this is Poseidon saying, Apollo, we should fight now, everyone else is fighting. "Young fool, what a mindless heart you have. Can you not even now remember all the evils we endured here by Ilion, you and I alone of the gods, when to proud Laomedon we came down from Zeus, and for a year were his servants for a stated hire, and he told us what to do, and to do it? Then I built a wall for the Trojans about their city." Line 446, now we get some history of these incredible walls around Troy, and the legend that Poseidon helped build them. "Then I built a wall for the Trojans about their city, wide and very splendid, so none could break into their city. But you, Phoebus, Apollo, herded this shambling, horn-curved cattle along the spurs of Ida with all her folds and her forests. But when the changing seasons brought on the time for our labor to be paid..." Okay, the Trojans had promised something to the gods for helping build this wall. "Then headstrong Laomedon violated and made void all our hire and sent us away and sent threats after us, for he threatened to hobble our feet and to bind our arms, to carry us away for slaves in the far-lying islands." Line 455. "He was even going to strip with bronze the ears from both of us. Then you and I took our way back with hearts full of anger and wrath for our hire which he promised us and would not accomplish it. Yet to his people you give now your grace, and you will not try with us to bring destruction on the insolent Trojans, to evil and complete with their honored wives and their children." In turn, the Lord who strikes from afar, Apollo, answered him, "Shaker of the earth, you would have me be as one without prudence, if I am to fight even you, for the sake of insignificant mortals, who are as leaves are, and now flourish and grow warm with life and feed on what the ground gives, but then again fade away and are dead. Therefore let us with all speed give up this quarrel, and let the mortals fight their own battles." He spoke so and turned away, for he was too modest to close and fight in strength of hand with his father's brother. He will not fight his uncle. He's too modest. Line 470. But his sister, Artemis of the Wild, the Lady of Wild Beasts, scolded him bitterly and spoke a word of revilement. "You run from him, striker from afar. You've yielded Poseidon the victory entire. He can brag where nothing has happened. Fool, then why do you wear that bow which is wind and nothing? Let me not hear you in the halls of my father boasting ever again as you did before among the immortals that you could match your strength in combat against Poseidon." So she spoke, but Apollo, who strikes from afar, said nothing to her. But the august consort of Zeus, full of anger, and of course this is going to be Hera, scolded the lady of showering arrows in words of revilement. Line 480. "How have you had the daring, you shameless hussy, to stand up and face me? It will be hard for you to match your strength with mine, even if you wear a bow, since Zeus has made you a lion among women and given you leave to kill any at your pleasure." This is Hera attempting to threaten Artemis. "Better for you to hunt down the ravening beasts in the mountains and deer of the wilds than try to fight in strength with your betters. But if you would learn what fighting is, come on, you'll find out how much stronger I am when you try to match your strength against me." She spoke, and caught both of her arms at the wrists in her left hand, and with her right hand stripped away the bow from her shoulders. Line 490. So Hera just grabbed Artemis and ripped her bow for shooting arrows away. Then with her own bow, smiling, boxed her ears as Artemis tried to twist away, and the flying arrows were scattered. She got under and free and fled in tears, as a pigeon in flight from a hawk wings her way into some rock hollow in a cave, since it was not destiny for the hawk to catch her. 495. So she left her archery on the ground and fled weeping. So Artemis runs away crying. Meanwhile, the guide, Argiophontes, this is Hermes, addressed him to Leto. "Leto, I will not fight with you, since it is a hard thing to come to blows with the brides of Zeus, who gathers the clouds. No sooner may you may freely speak among the immortal gods and claim that you are stronger than I and beat me." So he spoke, but Leto picked up the curved bow and the arrows which had fallen in the turn of the dust one way and another. When she had taken up the bow, she went back to her daughter. But the maiden came to the bronze-founded house on Olympus of Zeus, 505, and took her place kneeling at the knees of her father, and the ambrosial veil trembled about her. Her father Cronides caught her against him and laughed softly and questioned her. "Who now of the Uranian gods, dear child, has done such things to you, rashly, as if you were caught doing something wicked?" Line 510. Artemis, remember Artemis went crying off to her father? Artemis, sweet garlanded lady of clamors, answered him, "It was your wife, Hera of the white arms, who hit me, father, since hatred and fighting have fastened upon the immortals." Now, as these two were talking thus to each other, meanwhile Phoebus Apollo, line 515, went into the sacred city of Ilion, since he was concerned for the wall of the strong-founded city, lest the Danaans storm it on that day before they were fated. The rest of the gods who live forever went back to Olympus, some in anger and others glorying greatly, and sat down at the side of their father, the dark-misted. Meanwhile Achilles, line 521, was destroying alike the Trojan themselves. Now we're back to Achilles. Was destroying alike the Trojans themselves and their single-footed horses. What was it like? "And as when smoke ascending goes up into the wide sky from a burning city, with the anger of the gods let loose upon it, which inflicted labor upon them all, and sorrow on many, so Achilles, line 525, inflicted labor and sorrow upon the Achaeans. The aged Priam had taken his place on the god-built bastion, and looked out and saw gigantic Achilles, where before him the Trojans fled in the speed of their confusion. No war strength left them." And so here, Priam is watching from the walls and sees the Trojans are running. "He groaned and descended to the ground from the bastion," line 530, "and beside the wall set in motion the glorious guards of the gateway. Hold the gates wide open in your hands, so that our people in their flight can get inside the city, for here is Achilles close by, stampeding them, and I think there will be disaster. But once they're crowded inside the city and get wind again, shut once more the door leaves closely fitted together. I'm afraid this ruinous man may spring into our stronghold." So King Priam says, "Open the gates. The men need to run back in. I'm afraid Achilles will kill them all, or he could even get in." He spoke, and they spread open the gates and shoved back the door bars, and the gates opening let in daylight. Meanwhile, Apollo sprang out to meet them so that he could fend off destruction from the Trojans, who, straight for the city and the lift of the rampart, dusty from the plain and throats rugged with thirst, fled away, and Achilles followed fiercely with the spear, strong madness forever holding his heart and violent after his glory. There the sons of the Achaeans might have taken gate-towering Ilion, Troy, had not Phoebus Apollo sent on them brilliant Agenor, a man who was the son of Antenor, blameless and powerful. He drove courage into his heart, and stood there beside him in person so as to beat the dragging death spirits from him, and leaned there on an oak tree with close mist huddled about him. When Agenor was aware of Achilles, sacker of cities, he stood fast, but the heart was a storm in him as he waited. Line 551. And deeply disturbed, he spoke to his own great-hearted spirit. Ah, me! If I run away before the strength of Achilles, in the way that others are stampeded in terror before him, he will catch me even so and cut my throat like a coward's. But if I leave these men to be driven in flight by Achilles, Peleus's son, and run on my feet in another direction, away from the wall, to the plain of Ilion, until I come to the spurs of Ida, and take cover there within the undergrowth, then in the evening, when I've bathed in the river, and of course this is Agenor's soliloquy, he's talking to himself, and washed off, line 560, washed off the sweat, I could make my way back again to Ilion. Yet still, why does the heart within me debate on these things? This way, he might see me as I started to the plain from the city and go in pursuit, and in the speed of his feet overtake me, and then there will be no way to escape death and the death spirits. He is too strong. His strength is beyond all others. But then, if I go out in front of the city and stand fast against him, I think even his body might be torn by the sharp bronze. There is only one life in him, and people say he is mortal. It is only that Zeus, the son of Kronos, is granting him glory. Line 570. He spoke, and gathered himself to wait Achilles, and in him the fighting heart was urgent for the encounter of battle. But, as a leopard emerges out of her timbered cover to face the man who is hunting her, and takes no terror in her heart, nor thought of flight when she hears them baying against her, line 575, and even though one be too quick for her with spear thrust or spear thrown, stuck with the shaft though she be, she will not give up her fighting fury till she's closed with one of them or is overthrown. So the son of proud Antenor, brilliant Agenor, was unwilling to run away until he had tested Achilles, line 580, but held the perfect circle of his shield in front of him, and with the spear aimed at him, and cried out in a great voice, "You must have hoped within your heart, O shining Achilles, on this day to storm the city of the proud Trojans. You fool! There is much hard suffering to be done for its winning, since there are many of us inside, and men who are fighters, who will stand before our beloved parents, our wives, and our children to defend Ilion, to defend Troy. But in this place you will find your destiny, for all you are so headlong and so bold a warrior." Line 590. He spoke, and from his heavy hand let fly with the sharp spear, and struck him in the leg below the knee, nor entirely missed him, and taking the spear, the greave of new-wrought tin clattered horribly, and back from the struck greave the bronze rebounded without getting through, but the gift of the god defended Achilles. So Achilles' new greaves work. Line 595. After him, Peleus' son made his spring at godlike Agenor. So Achilles springs at Agenor. But Apollo would no further grant him the winning of glory, but caught Agenor away, closing him in dense mist, and sent him to make his way quietly out of the battle. Then, by deception, he kept Pelion away from the people. So by deception, Apollo tricks Pelion Achilles and keeps him away from the Trojans. Line 600. The striker from afar likened himself in all ways to Agenor, and stood there before his feet, and Achilles sprang in chase of him in the speed of his feet. For the time he chased him across the wheat-bearing plain, turning him toward the deep whirls of the river Scamandrus as he ran a little in front, with the trick Apollo beguiled him so that he hoped ever by running to catch up with him. All this time the rest of the Trojans fled in a body gladly into the town, and the city was filled with their swarming. How does Apollo help the Trojans escape? He looks like Agenor, who was just facing Achilles before, and lets Achilles chase him toward the water. And of course this gives the Trojans all a chance to get back in their city. They dared no longer outside the wall and outside the city to wait for each other and find out which one had got away and who had died in the battle, so hastily were they streaming into the city, each man as his knees and feet could rescue him. And thus ends Book 21.